talking about? Welcome back.
What? What's up, everybody? How you doing? And welcome back to another episode of Living Life Intently. Someday I'll change up that intro, but today is not that day.
Not the day for reinventing the wheel, is it, Fee? All right, let's try this again.
What's up, everybody? How you doing? And welcome back to another episode of Living Life Intently. I'm your host, Lee Frazier. I'm here with...
Jonathan Canary.
Oh, geez. I thought you were going to yell in my ears. I was fully prepared for that yell. But I hope you guys enjoyed last week's podcast with Bryson at the Highlands Hostel. That one was, it was so much fun, and I got a lot of great feedback from it. I'm going to jump into this podcast in a minute, but I'm going to tell you guys about a couple things going on. We just launched our preseason sale on our glamping and different accommodation packages for the campground this summer. So if you want to save a little bit of money, head to our website. It's on the main page. Save 10% off your entire booking when you book before March 31st. We've been running that every year since we got going. And we also have a clearance sale on all of our merch on the website, all the t-shirts and shirts. We're making way for new spring merch. So if you want to save 30% off of your entire purchase, head over to livelifeintense.shop and grab a couple t-shirts and sweaters, and whatever else is left on that website's got to go. But who do we got this week, Jonathan?
We have Robin Young and Kyle McPhee of Fee's Original Goods.
Yeah, we're in Sydney, and it's blizzarding outside, and it's just getting worse by the hour. So
we're in a nice wood heated house.
Yeah. And they run a leather goods shop based in the Sydney, and we're just going to jump right into it. You got anything else to say?
Let's hop in there.
Okay, we got to go because the weather's getting shitty, so I got to get home without dying. Anyways, we'll catch you next week. Cheers.
So we have Robin Young and Kyle McPhee with us today from Fee's Original Goods.
Yeah, we are in Sydney.
Welcome.
Sitting in the living room. Nice cozy living room, new wood stove.
Beautiful heritage home.
Yep. It's nice to have you guys in here. It's a snowy afternoon.
Yeah. It's blizzarding. It's getting worse.
It's honestly getting quite bad, yeah.
It wasn't that bad coming up. It was like windy and margery, and then it hit the hot. Sydney was clear when I got here.
Yeah, it was nice this morning. It was just like kind of drizzly, so
I shoveled here just off the back step for you.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, if you want to stay over, I shoveled off the back step for you.
For those listening, I'm not allowed to stay in the house. I'm a back step sleeper. That's the rule. I got to sleep outside.
I feel like there's a story behind that.
I have no idea where it came from. He just brought it up in a group chat, so I have no idea. I tend to sleep outside. I like sleeping outside.
To each their own.
I like cold environments. Very, very frigid. That's why my room is like 5 degrees.
I don't know. The boys are mental. Like, they'll dig a snow hole and throw a bivy over their sleep bag and sleep in the snow hole.
You don't need a bivy. Don't need a bivy.
You don't even need it. Like,
dig a hole deep enough. You're
just
good to go.
Yeah, just sleep in a snow hole tonight, boys. Yeah, screw set up a tent. We don't need a tent. Just extra snow weight. Holes.
It's all it is extra weight. You know, that's my logic.
So tell us about Fee's Original Goods.
Fee's Original Goods. It's a company that we run together. It's a leather craft company, I suppose. We make leather goods. We make wallets, bags, belts, all kinds of accessories, little knickknacks. We operate out of Eldeweg Art Center here in beautiful North End Sydney. We've been doing it for about 3 or 4 years now. I always lose track of time.
I think it's 4 years.
4 years? Have you been keeping track of?
Well, because the last time I seen you before I got sober was in Port Hawkesbury.
That's true.
Right?
That's true. Mm-hmm. And that, I guess you've kept track of that time.
Yeah.
Quite well.
For sure.
Yeah. I guess so. So yeah, about 4 years we've been doing it, professionally, I'd say. And, been doing it a lot longer than that as a hobby.
Well, you just got that. A memory thing popped up with a belt that you made, the first thing.
That's
10 years ago?
That's true. It was 10 years ago last week that I got a memory on my Facebook popped up that showed me some photos I put up of the first thing I'd ever made out of leather.
Cool.
And it was a tooled belt with a bunch of Western designs. Pretty classic first project for somebody just getting into it.
It's but like, It's like making a bird feeder in shop class.
Is yeah. That yeah.
Equivalent.
Exactly. Exactly. And that was January of 2012. So that was 10 years ago. Exactly.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've been doing it as a hobby since then. And, it's a tricky hobby to have because there's so much hammering. You don't exactly need a shop like you do for a wood shop. You know, you can do it at a kitchen table or in your bedroom if you need to. You can do it anywhere, but it's loud because you're always hammering stitch holes and pounding rivets and stuff like that. So over those 10 years or over those 4, 5, 6 years that I was doing it as a hobby, it would depend on my living situation as to how much leather work I could get done. I would do it full bore until my roommates or the people next door in an apartment next to me would get pissed off. And then I would have to shut it down for a bit until I moved and found somewhere else to do it. So, so I'd done it as a hobby for a while and then we get into it professionally about 4 years ago and we just had enough work to keep us going full time with it.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah.
I can attest to the quality of Fee's Original Goods because
do tell.
I'm really hard on belts. I mean, like, I would go through 2 or 3 belts a year because I'm always hanging things off them or, like, using them for other things other than pants.
Yep.
And that's
sure.
You can use your mind for that one.
But, you know, that first belt I got off you in Port Hawkesbury 4 years ago, I still have that.
Yeah.
And the only reason I bought a new belt is because I don't foresee me losing any weight in the future. I'm really bad. I'm really hard on anything, everything, every piece of gear I have, and wallet, keychain, all good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that would have been 4 years ago or so that you got that belt. Mm-hmm. And we get that a lot of times. That someone just messaged me this morning actually. And, they said they're looking for a belt and they're sick of getting cardboard belts. And we get a lot of people that come to us cause they buy what they think is a real leather, and it is a real leather.
Genuine leather belt.
Exactly. It is genuine leather, but it's a very thin leather veneer over a cardboard filler for the belt you'll get at Walmart or whatever big box store.
Is that what they use in those? Cardboard?
It's all kinds of different stuff. Fabric, cardboard, whatever. I haven't really dug too deep into how to make those shitty belts. But what we do is we get a thick hide of leather that's I think it's a 9/11 ounce is almost 1/4 inch thick, and we'll cut that into straps and make belts with that. So it's genuine cow hide, it's real leather, and it's the real deal. It's not the fake stuff, so it holds up. It's just good. It's leather's proven itself over the millennia, and it's nice to work with materials that you don't have to product test every single. If I buy Vegtan leather, I know what I'm getting with Vegtan leather because it's been made the same way for years and years and years, and I know it's going to hold up even if Canary's using it for whatever he uses his belts for.
And it looks good when it patinas. It's like heirloom piece.
Yeah.
I still have stuff from like my grandfather's on either side, old leather stuff. Also, I got a set of skis that are leather bindings.
Well, there's
like wooden skis. It would be my grandfather or my great grandfather on my dad's side. And I got it from Miles Kehoe, who runs the antique shop in Marguerite by the co-op.
Great
Miles,
shop.
Miles from nowhere. I walked in the shop one day and he goes, I'm going to give you these. These are your great grandfather's. I'm only giving them to you if you mount them on the wall or do something like that. I'm not giving them to you otherwise.
He foresaw you going downhill skiing with those things.
Oh, dude, they're like 6 inches wide and probably like 8-9 feet long, wooden skis and with leather bindings. And they still like, I could go outside. If I wax them, I could go outside and use them.
Wow.
It's crazy.
How did you guys link up?
Should we tell them the truth or no, we were, Robin was living in Collingwood, Ontario, and I was traveling for work. I was building skate parks at the time. I'd done concrete work for a number of years and I was building a skate park in Collingwood, Ontario, where Robin was living.
Yeah. I was working at a skate shop and, these two people came in and like got chatting and he says, yeah, we're building a skate park. And I was curious because, like, how do you live here? Do you, like, is this like a thing that there's so many skate parks being built that it's local or what? And he was saying that they were traveling all over, and he was with Dylan, and Dylan's from Angus, so he was kind of close to Collingwood. But anyway, they were all traveling, and I had just gotten back from a trip to Cape Breton, and that's kind of cool. How we got chatting.
Yeah, it's not too often you meet people and you get chatting, and it's like, oh yeah, I just came back from Cape Breton not too long ago. Yeah. What, why? What were you doing out there?
Yeah.
What did you come here for?
My friend Emily was traveling across the country, and she and her van, so she had driven out to the East Coast, and she'd asked me to join for a part of it, and I wanted to come to the East Coast, and I wanted to come to Cape Breton because of the Scottish connection.
Cool.
Textbook. And yeah, so she, I flew into Halifax, and she picked me up, and we came straight up to Cape Breton and done the loop, and yeah, stayed at five-star hotel at Sydney River Walmart parking lot. And pretty sure they thought the lady, I went in the morning, funny side story, went in the morning to brush my teeth and get changed, and I hear this knocking on the stall door, and it's the Walmart employee, and pretty sure she thought I was nicking stuff. I was just getting changed and brushing my teeth and went back out to the car, but yeah, it's good.
Cool.
Fun. Now every time I go to Sydney River Walmart, that's all I can think about. Yeah.
Like, oh, I have that fond memory.
They've got her poster up in the lobby.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
And you came here. Did you move here? Immigrated here? Or did you grow up in Canada? Sort of grow up in Canada.
I moved to Canada when I was 15. So okay. I was done most of my growing in Scotland.
Yeah.
And finished grade 11 and grade 12 in Canada. So in Ontario.
And where at in Scotland?
A place called Bathgate, just in between Glasgow and Edinburgh.
Yeah.
Actually, a place called Blackburn.
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 I get a kick out of that place. Yeah.
Do you know Susan Boyle, the singer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's where she's from.
Do you
Blackburn.
Know her?
No. Oh. Fortunately not.
Didn't your grandparents bump into her getting groceries one day?
Oh, people are all... She still lives there, so people are always bumping into her and stuff. The other famous Bathgate bairn is David Tennant. Do you guys know David Tennant?
I know the name. Yeah, I should know who that
Doctor
is.
Doctor Who fame. He was in the fourth Harry Potter film.
Oh, yeah.
He's been in a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
He's from Bathgate. His dad was a minister, and my grandparents knew him.
And let's not forget who you went to elementary school with. What's his name? I forget his name. I totally forgot who he went to.
Lewis Capaldi.
Lewis Capaldi.
Yeah, he went to Bathgate Academy.
Cool.
Yeah, and then there's obviously me. Famous.
But you haven't lost much of your accent, eh?
No, don't think so.
No, I don't. Well, I mean, it's... I have like cousins that have moved to the UK that have developed an accent.
Mm-hmm. Well, Kyle's aunt is... she lives in England, but she is like Cape Breton, like... born and raised, and then went. I don't know how long she's been in England for, but even when she comes here, like, I've only ever met her here, and she's surrounded by Cape Bretoners, but she still has her like English accent, which is like weird because I know mine gets stronger in the presence of other Scottish people, and my brother speaks whatever he hears. It's really weird.
If he was here,
yeah. If he was here talking to you three, he would sound like you three. But then when he's at home with us, he sounds like us.
And he was a few years younger when he moved over here too. So he would have been in junior high, I guess.
He done all of high school, like grade nine, he started.
What did Bryson say last week? Come on. Yeah. So how do you guys find working together? Is it a good vibe? Is it a good workflow? I'm assuming there's definitely some button heads on certain topics, as it, there always is with anybody.
Totally. It depends on the day. It depends on what we're doing, but we get along great together in the shop. Like, it's definitely a yin and a yang situation.
I love how Fee does like a story, and it'll take like 10 frames for him to say something, and then you come on and you just sum it all up in one frame.
Yep.
That's the nutshell, I suppose.
Right? But no, I think we get along good and work together well. And yeah, there is the odd but in a head, but it's yeah.
It's I always look at the year in big blocks of months too. And so the few months that we're in right now, like between January and March,
yeah.
We've passed Christmas, we've passed a really busy period.
Yep.
And now we kind of reassess our product line and look at the last year and see what worked, what didn't work as far as our products, as far as our shop, as far as everything. So this is the time of year when things are kind of slow that we can reassess and make big decisions for the year going ahead.
Yeah.
And then we get into the spring, which is like our wholesale season where we're getting orders out to shops to get ready for summer and the tourist season. And then once we get through that and summer is kind of a mishmash of a bunch of stuff, then we get into prepping for Christmas.
Yeah.
And Christmas is always crazy for us. So that's all to say that in this time of year, when we're sitting around the shop making the big decisions for the year ahead, it can get a little testy at times, and because they're big decisions you got to make, you got to, you know, it's, we don't always see eye to eye on everything we do, but we're always able to come to a consensus and like make the little compromises that you have to make to move forward and get stuff done. And it's a really, like, it's not like things ever get too heated. It's a leather shop. It's not like we're, you know, it's not that serious in there. So,
and you guys definitely have, there's some staple pieces that you'll probably always make.
Mm-hmm.
And what ones are those?
The Bucklaw wallet I made. I never want to make another one. That's all anyone gifts to any other, like, dad or adult male.
But for a good reason, but speaking as an adult male, like, that is
it's the
kind of wallet that pretty much everybody wants.
It's a nice wallet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm loving the Dunvegan.
Mm-hmm. And I wish more, like, it's weird because we used to go to markets and then we stopped because there was none on. And then we'd mostly done our sales online, and people, I don't know if it's like a safety thing, like people just buy the Bucklaw because it's like the, you know, it's the wallet that, like, it's a bifold classic, like you can't get any more classic. But then we took other wallets to these markets and they all sold really well, like the Dunvegan, and there's a bunch of other ones as well. But yeah, it's like once people see other kinds like the Dunvegan, it's like, well, that's cool. But yeah,
it's also with I know for myself, if I know something like that, that is the classic wallet, the bifold wallet that, you know, you've held one in your hands before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if you're unfamiliar with a different style, and you haven't I'm a very, I don't buy it much online unless I know that I've had either had it before or I've tried it on and that's the one, or I've seen it and that's what I want.
Yeah.
Because I have to touch it and feel it, and especially with clothing or like outdoor wear or anything like that, I have to do it.
Yeah.
And you know what, and plus it's like not something that you're going to buy like 20 of them. So it's like, well, I'm going to know if I know that that's the thing that I'm getting, you can trust that that's what you're getting and you can order it. So that might also be a thing as well. But
yeah,
it's definitely a thing. And also too, we get a lot of people who will get gifted a wallet and it's not the kind of wallet that they use. And we're not a massive corporation where you have to go through some crazy return policy. You just send us a message and it's like, hey, I got this wallet and I don't really use this kind of wallet. Can I exchange it for a different kind of wallet? And it's easy as, yep, send us the wallet and we'll send you out the one you want and just pay the difference. So yeah, we're.
And what's the process when you guys are looking at developing new products? Like, is this the time of year that you sit down and think
absolutely.
About that?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I heard somebody, I forget where I heard this. It was on a podcast somewhere. They said they were talking about research and development, R&D, and they said we call R&D rip off and duplicate. Which it sometimes feels like that when we're making a new wallet, because you can't reinvent the wheel with wallets. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But we have some we try to like put certain systems in place, I guess, that make designing new stuff easier. So you'll notice all the pockets on our wallets have a wave cut. So we just use that wave cut across all of our wallets, and it keeps everything looking
similar.
Similar. Yeah. It's easy to, we know the radius of those curves, so we can transfer them to different designs. And it takes the thinking out of it. It's, if we're doing a pocket, we know it's the wave.
It also cuts consistency. It also, you know, it probably cuts down a lot of time in the long run.
Absolutely. You know what I mean? Yeah, yeah, totally. But it starts, we do a lot of, like everybody does, just browsing through Instagram and social media. And
well, the first thing we done the other night was we went through everything and we basically cut the stuff that we were, that wasn't selling or we didn't like or whatever the case was.
Yep.
Right.
And then we kind of identified the gaps, and then Kyle keeps on Instagram, he keeps different saved folders. And so he'll save some product that he likes, but he also does like side note, like product photography and stuff, or
yeah,
posts that made me stop, so that when we are looking at marketing and posting on Instagram and Facebook and stuff, like what kind of the vibe that you want to go with. But anyway, yeah. So yeah, then we look at what other people are doing and get inspiration and see if we can identify what's missing in our lineup and then build on that.
Yeah. And then from there, it gets into going into the shop and just fooling around with leather and making paper templates and building new things and scrapping a whole lot of wallets and giving a bunch of wallets away to people that didn't really work, and just whittling it down until we get wallets that look right, that fit with the rest of our lineup and that work and that we think are going to work well at the rest of it. So it's fun. It's really fun. It's this time of year, it's nice to take that time and do that stuff.
It's a lot less pressure too. It's, yeah, you're just kind of, everybody's doing the same thing for the most part around these parts. It's like, chill out, relax. Retail is a really slow time of year.
Yep.
And you know, it's just like a good, and it's snowing outside. So people don't really, you know, most people don't sleep in snowbanks.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Others.
What would be like some of your favorite products other than the baseline? Like some of the favorite products that you've been a part of over the last couple of years? And it doesn't have to be something that necessarily you've sold on your website. Maybe it's a custom piece or whatever. We've done a couple custom things. Some of them never saw fruition, which we're fun to do, but you know, anyway.
Yeah, we did one that comes to mind is a belt we did with Wynn Tornitz, Torwitz? I can't remember.
Tornitz.
Wynn Tornitz. Wynn T on Instagram, WYNNT. He's an artist who moved to Cape Breton recently and set up shop here. And we linked up through the Cape Breton Center for Craft and Design. Mm-hmm. And we just got chatting, and he wanted to do like a piece with us. And so he had a piece of artwork, which he's known for his squiggly people. He makes some like squiggly figures. I don't know if you guys are familiar with his stuff.
Yeah, I've seen this.
It's super cool. Like pretty minimalist kind of art. I don't exactly know how to describe it, but he did up a design and we got a stamp made and stamped it onto belts and sold the belts. So
it's a repeating pattern too, so it's like groovy guys dancing.
It's
the way that he drew it was that it just repeats, and then so we got the single brass stamp that's only 4 inches long, and then stamped it, moved the belt. It's really cool.
Yeah, turned out really good. That was a fun one to do. Wynn was fun to work with, and it got some eyes on our work that I don't think our work would have got otherwise. So that was really cool.
His stuff is really peculiar. Like his tattoos and his other pieces. It's a really charming in a very peculiar way.
Yeah. Big time. Some other work we've done. We do. We get Chuck Rathall. You guys know Chuck?
Oh yeah.
We get him to do all or most of our photography. So every time that we send him out with a box of product to shoot photos of, that's always fun. It's always nice to see what he comes back with. Mm-hmm. So that's always cool to kind of collaborate on that front. And we kind of moved away from custom work, really. Like we used to do, when I started, like everybody starts only doing custom work because that's, I mean, not everybody, but most people start doing custom work, and it's a good way to grow and learn the trade and try a billion different things. But know that we can just sell our product line. Well, mostly just sell our product line. It's kind of nice to do that. So yeah, we kind of moved away from custom stuff, but stuff like that, like collaborations with other artists or makers is fun to do.
I mean, it just takes, I would imagine it just takes a lot more time because it's not, you've got your workflow down when you're making all your products, right? So when you're doing a custom run, it's complete different. You know, you might mess something up on this side, scrap it, have to make it, waste that that product. And
And you have to charge so much more for it. With the product that we sell, it's already so expensive to make up for our time, for the material. So, and I mean, it's not like we live in a life of luxury, you know what I mean? Like, I hate the fact that we have to sell it for so much money. So when you do custom stuff where you're only making one piece at a time, it has to sell for so much more money to recoup your costs and for all the little mess ups and stuff.
Yeah. And it's, that's been, I mean, from your stuff and I feel the same way with pricing stuff for us. When it comes to doing, you know, outdoor activities and things like that, because I come from, you know, we grew up in Cape Breton Island, so things don't cost that much. And then, you know, we're using, like, for instance, this trip across the Highlands, pricing that. And once I started, you know, when we first started, I was just throwing numbers. I just like, I guess this would work. I don't know. Let's try to sell
it. What can you base it off of?
I have no experience. Yeah. It's like tubing in the river, $30. Yeah. Fuck, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. So, and then, you know, we priced this thing out. It was very hard because I'm looking at the actual price and I'm like, that's kind of pricey for, you know, it is kind of pricey and you hate to do it. But I'm like, I mean, you look at the hard numbers, I'm like, that's the only way of actually doing it and making it as a viable business.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You hate to do it, but it's, you know, it is what it is. So,
And the great thing about that too is, though, there's a lot of people around here who, like, they understand why it's priced like that. And we always feel everybody, that's why makers and entrepreneurs always underprice their own stuff, but it's rarely an issue. You know what I mean? It's people, when people come to markets, nobody's coming around to the table saying, oh, this is so expensive. This is so expensive. They say, like, this is so nice. This is so beautiful. It's the price isn't the issue. You know what I mean? Yeah. There's, you get the odd person who'll come around, but they're the exception to the rule. I think most people understand that you're giving them value for the money. And
how do you guys find, speaking, I wanted to kind of wheel back. You were talking about selling on Instagram and, that's how do you find through the last like 2 years, I'm assuming that that's taken off quite a bit compared to what it was pre-pandemic, but how is the online sales going? Do you find like Instagram, for instance, is a good, does it a lot of, I guess, is it a good sales funnel? Do you find? Cause I'm always curious cause I use Instagram to sell some of our stuff. Cause you can do it for people that don't know, you can only do it for physical products. Mm-hmm. Can't do it for like tours or accommodations or anything like that. But through Shopify, through our website, we can sell stuff through there and it's generated quite a bit of revenue, but I'm just wondering what your experience is with it.
Yeah. I think we get a lot from when Kyle first started, we didn't have, or he had a website, but it was like, most people were buying through Instagram.
Yep.
And then we had to try and get people to go to the website from Instagram, but no one was just going to the website. And then the pandemic hit and then we got Shopify and started, and then they done the integration with the Instagram. And to be honest, neither of us are web people. And so I couldn't tell, I don't even know how to run a report to see where the sales come from. But the feedback that we get at markets and stuff, like a lot of people are finding us on Instagram. And I think the product, being able to tag the products on Instagram makes a big difference and stuff. But yeah.
Yeah. And Instagram is definitely where we focus most of our efforts into building the brand and stuff. And it seems to have the most impact, the most bang for our buck. So yeah. And when the pandemic first hit, that first month, I think we made $100. I think we sold one bag that month of April and everybody was just sitting around like, what is going on? Like, what's going to happen? Yeah. What, you know?
And we couldn't really, we didn't want to go to the shop either. Cause it was like, we didn't know like what was going on, and Meals on Wheels operate out of that building.
Yep.
And we were like, what if we get sick and we give the Meals on Wheels workers the sickness and then they give the vulnerable population that they're feeding? Like, so that was, we were just avoiding there as well. And so that was like a thing.
And that was March and April-ish. And then after that, so that was like $100 month was March. And then the next month was pretty slow. But ever since then, the website just exploded. The sales have doubled like year over year. Is that how you say it?
I think so,
month over month, year over year. And it's just been, we've been growing
big
every
business.
This is all new. This is all new.
Well, at least you guys know what's going on. Last week, Bryson, I was like, buddy, how was the summer? He goes, good. I don't know.
I don't even know. I don't even look at that stuff.
People come and people stay here. And I don't know. I just have a good time.
Yeah. He's still reeling from it.
Okay.
But everybody has their own approach to it. Obviously, it's working for him. You know what I mean? Yeah. Whatever Bryson's doing up there is working.
Yeah.
And it's really sick to see somebody making it work up there. But yeah, we try to keep an eye on things as much as we can. And sometimes you get sick of looking at it and it's, you kind of look away for a little while and just let it do its own thing.
Yeah.
And we do everything ourselves too. Like we're not, we don't hire a bookkeeper and an accountant and stuff. So like it's a blessing and a curse, I guess. But so I think we have like a fairly good grasp because we don't, and we're probably at the point that we should start kind of outsourcing the stuff that we don't enjoy, but we've not yet.
I would like to point out that we do go to Wayne Banfield for our taxes.
Love Wayne.
Is the bomb.
Love Wayne.
So many times I call him, just I won't talk to him for months at a time, and then just call him up out of nowhere like, Wayne, what do I do here? Why should I do this? Why do I do that? But yeah, Wayne's the best.
Shout out to Wayne. Tax man. That's something I did a couple of years ago because I absolutely hate doing it. So my accountant became, I brought mom on it because she was doing all my bookkeeping, monthly bookkeeping through, she runs it for the business, her family business. So I was starting to do it with Simply Accounting, but trying to keep up with that and running everything all summer, I was just like, hey, can I just get you on board to do this? But since then, I switched over to, I don't know what program you guys are using, but I switched to Xero, and it like integrates with every platform that I use. So it owns, there's a company that comes along with Xero. The company that owns Xero owns this app called HubDoc. So essentially, you take a picture of a receipt, it scans the receipt, and if it's, say, from the Marguerite Co-op, I can have an auto allocation to a certain account. So if Marguerite Co-op is usually like cleaning supplies, well then, every time I upload that receipt, it'll auto allocate that expenditure. I'll have to approve it, but it'll pop up in all these invoices that I have to reconcile. And so it keeps everything in a cloud, all my receipts. So I take a picture of it, upload it, and then I just throw the receipt out and it saves it. Well, I don't, because I'm a lunatic. I have folders of receipts just in case the app doesn't work, because I don't trust technology that much. However, my accountant does, and she does my bookkeeping now. Everything's just integrated, like Shopify. My booking system is all integrated, so every time somebody makes a booking for tubing, it's all set up and allocates to the tubing account, and she just goes on and checks it every week. We have a meeting every month and we go over all the outstanding stuff, and it's like it's like 300-400 bucks a month for like her service, and I don't have to think about it.
Yeah, that's really right.
We should have had this conversation a month ago.
but it's food for thought, eh? Yeah. But it's like, I didn't know, because I was in my workflow. I was accustomed to how I would do things, and then I was very, I guess, apprehensive about how this would work. And then after a year later, we started a year ago transferring it all, and I'm like, I'm never going back. Ever.
We just, this is like yesterday, Robin had a call with QuickBooks. We just signed up for QuickBooks. But before that, we were using a program, I don't know if you've heard of it, Microsoft Excel.
No way. That's what I used to.
It's great. It works, you know, but
I'm still like, prefer Excel, because I got QuickBooks and then opened it and I was like, what am I supposed to do? And so, but the guerrilla market, he does. Like, I kept getting all these ads and like the 80% off for the first 3 months until next week. And I was like, like maybe we should just get it. And so I succumbed.
They gotcha.
And they got us. And then I downloaded it and I'm like, what the heck is this? But the Chamber of Commerce do, we're not chamber members, but I'm signed up for their newsletter. And they do classes, like 10-week programs.
Yep.
And they're doing a QuickBooks Online one. So I had my little chat with the instructor yesterday, and that's starting. And I think I'm hoping that I'm going to learn a bunch from that. But
I mean, yeah. It's definitely beneficial to know it and go into it. And I mean, that's, I kind of did it for a little while, but yeah, it's one thing that I absolutely despise.
Yeah.
So as soon as I had the ability to offload that task to somebody else, I was like, yep, see you later.
Yeah.
Let me be the guy on the ground running, doing all the other shit. And, but yeah, it's been working out, man. Yeah.
I want to interject here.
Okay.
What are some new products that you're excited about?
Some new products.
Are you willing to spill the beans?
Oh, yeah. There's one. All this stuff won't come out for a little bit yet. We're still, you know, going through the whole process and everything. But so I'm sure you're familiar with how we name our products. We name everything after a place in Cape Breton.
Yep.
Everything has a Cape Breton name. We take a little liberty with that sometimes, like one thing is called the Aberdeen, which is named after New Aberdeen, which is a community in Glace Bay. And so it's like we take a little bit of liberty. Anyways, my uncle, John, was in the shop a few weeks ago and he was looking at all the wallets. And my family, my mom's family grew up on the Glen Morrison Road out in East Bay. Mm-hmm. And John still lives at the Glen Morrison. And my grandma and my uncle have a little cabin out that way. And John was looking at the wallets. He said, Kyle, you got to name something the Glen Morrison, you know, like, why haven't you named anything the Glen Morrison yet? And Robin and I talked about it that night and I was thinking like, why didn't I name anything the Glen Morrison yet? And I thought like, I can't just throw this name away. Like this one's got to mean something. And then that was the week that we got the wood stove here. And my uncle called me up and he said, come on out the cabin and we can cut up some wood and fill your truck up. And we'll get you going with the wood stove. And so then it clicked. Robin suggested we had it on our minds that we wanted to make a log carrier for a long time. Like, just like a sling that you put the split wood in and throw it over your shoulder. And Robin said, we should make your Uncle Leo a log carrier for helping us out with the firewood. And as soon as she said it, it clicked in my mind. I was like, that's going to be called the Glen Morrison for sure. That's the one.
Nice.
So that's going to be coming down the pipe pretty soon. And we made one and gave it to Leo and Grandma there last week or 2 weeks ago and put it to use. And I think we have to make a couple of adjustments to it. We made it a little big. Leo looked at it and he was like, geez, you expect me to fill that with wood? Okay. Like, come on, Kyle, might be good for a 20-year-old. Who's like in the prime of, you know, who can carry that much wood. But yeah, so that's coming down the pipe and we're really stoked about that. And then we're still kind of working on some other stuff. So you'll see some wallets. We've been getting a lot of requests for like coin pouches, and trifold wallets. So we might make some kind of trifold coin pouch kind of wallet and do something there. And we're also looking at playing with our lineup of bags as well. So we wanted to get a messenger bag into the lineup, mm-hmm. like a classic full leather, throw your computer in it, throw it over your shoulder kind of thing. So, that's definitely on deck as well.
Cool.
But nothing solidified just yet, but we're still working on it. And we usually have all our new products out around February, March, ready for the wholesale season. So yeah, cool. So that's a few of the ones we have kicking around.
It's updated in the middle of January. We should probably start doing some work.
I have, it's funny you mentioned Glen Morrison. A few of us have gone out. I mean, I've personally been out 9 times on the back of that mountain looking for the Glen Morrison settlement, which is an old Gaelic settlement. I might be wrong on this, but someone told me it was the longest inhabited Gaelic settlement on the island.
Oh, really?
And so I've seen some pictures of it that were taken years ago. I haven't been able to get an actual location on it. So we have searched all up the banks of the Woodbine Brook.
Right.
But it's, there's still, like the stone walls to the houses are all still there.
I should link you up with my Uncle Leo. He'd probably be like, oh yeah, yeah, just so take if your this family, turn off of here.
Well,
yeah.
If your family grew up there, they might have some insider info on that.
Yeah.
But, there's just so much history up that area. Actually, they had the post office closed in 1952. That was the that was when the post office closed in that Gaelic settlement.
No mm-hmm. shit.
Wow.
Yeah.
Crazy.
What a wealth of knowledge we have sitting here. That's really cool though. Like I've been going out to that area my whole life and this is the first I've heard of that. And
so myself, James Forsey, there's a whole raft of people that have gone looking for it that have done some done research and tried to find old maps and things like that. But
very cool.
None of us have really come to.
Just go see Leo. He'll probably tell you right where it's at. Like 5 years looking for the settlement, and then it's like in 20 minutes you've got it.
Yeah. I believe there's one man left. There's one living member of that community left.
Cool.
And he's a good Connell McKinnon is a good friends with him. He's,
gotcha.
He's probably in his 90s now.
But right.
Yeah.
Very
Here's
cool.
a kind of related story. There was one when we first moved to Cape Breton. I was on the internet and I got into Wikipedia, and you know, you go down the rabbit hole of Wikipedia where you just keep clicking links and links and links. But I was reading about this abandoned little town. And I was like, Kyle, like, we need to go here. Like, it's called Broughton.
Yeah.
I was so stoked on it. And he was like, yeah. Brown, like no, like it's yeah, just we, common
what is
knowledge.
It? What is it?
We used to drink there as kids. It's like,
and it's not abandoned. There's still Noel's family still lives in Brown. It's
Do you
not
know Brown?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
So what it is originally was it was part of a village, and then a hotel property purchased it, and there was a resort there. And it's there, is that
let me stop you there. There was a mining company that was setting up.
Where though?
So between the Lewisburg Highway and Glace Bay.
Okay.
So if you take Morrison Road, that will take you to, you know, you can take Broughton, you can go to Broughton from there, or you can take what's the other one? What's the other road?
I can't think of
the one that goes to Myra Gut. Anyways, Horns Road. Horns Road.
Right.
You could take Horns Road, and you could take Broughton Road off of there. And
interesting.
Yeah. And so there was a mine that popped up, and then a community built up around this mine. But whatever this was like a new mining company that was trying to break into Cape Breton, and I think it was like DevCo's predecessor blocked them from continuing their cut of mine any further. And so they could only mine as much coal as they could in that small area before they got cut off by this other company, and the town that they built up around that fell off. And then they used that hotel for troops in the First World War, Second World War, something like that.
Oh, First World War.
And then the hotel was transformed into a resort, and they took the rail line that was on the land, and they put these little passenger cars on it, so you could go around Loon Lake on like a little mini rail car, right?
I never knew about that one.
Yeah. So that's why the banks and everything are all still in really good condition and cut out. It's because up until, I don't know, the 30s or something, it was still being like, all the rail was still there. Yeah. Everything was still being utilized, right?
And from what I remember, the owner of the mining company had this like utopian idea of this little town. Mm-hmm. And so like the hotel was really grand, and like it just seemed like really
first
cool.
First revolving door in North America was in Broughton. That's their claim to fame.
Yeah.
No shit.
Yeah.
So is that building still standing?
Just the foundation.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, wow. It's just ruins. And they say there's a
ghost.
There's all kinds of ghost stories and stuff about that place. But I actually go there to forage. There's like lobster mushrooms and all different types of coral mushrooms and things like that out there. Like the ecosystem there is thriving for fungi. Yeah.
See, it's not abandoned. It's not abandoned at all.
The oldest living organisms live there.
Wow, crazy. Yeah. I did not know about any of that. Jesus.
That's some Glace Bay history for you there. I guess Broughton's not Glace Bay, but I'm close.
I got to get over this side of the island.
There's lots to see around.
Yeah, I've kind of gone through all the other side. So if we get over this way, it seems to be more abandoned things over here.
Yeah. Do you know what? Do you know it's a really great story? Kyle and I grew up together, and we grew up swimming at this place, the Number Two Shore.
The Number Two Shore, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, to describe this place, it's a really, really big cliff at the end of like a coal mining like community. So, a lot of half houses and things like that. What do we used to call them? Like company houses.
Company houses, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so, you drive through this older community right to a cliff, and then you hike down the cliff, and you can like jump off the rocks, and there's a, like a really nice place to swim. On the other side, there's this pebble beach. And so you walk along the cliffs to get to this pebble beach, and it's full of glass and metal and all kinds of stuff. And so if you look the satellite view of this area, it's like a big bowl, and you can see the ocean is like a bowl. I mean, if when you're down on the beach, you'll see the timber sticking out of the cliff wall. I always wonder what it was, and I met up with Kenny Boone down there one day, and he said, you know, I was like, man, look at all this igneous rock, because all the rocks have like these portholes in them, right? And he said, that's not igneous rock. I said, well, what is it? And he told me this story. Now, I might bastardize this. You might want to see the Beaton Institute for the the OG story. But so in the late 1800s, there was a mining company operating out of there, and the miners went on strike. You know what I mean? Like classic story, poor wages, poor safety, that sort of thing. Miners went on strike. The mine hired a company from Pictou. They got all these miners up from Pictou. Cross the picket line. So one day the miners let them come out of the mine in the morning, but wouldn't let day shift go in. They went in with jugs of kerosene and they lit the mine on fire. The coal burned through the entire seam of that area. Jesus. It made the ground super fragile like brick, and it washed out. And it created this bowl in the bedrock. And that's what the igneous rock is a sandstone brick.
That's insane.
Yeah. Wow. So it's just like all around where we grew up, Robin, are all of these like stories of like, just like.
It was such a.
History, such a, but not super old history.
No. It was such a busy place back at the turn of the century, turn of the. I don't know what early 1900s.
Yeah.
So there's so many labor stories to come out of, crazy labor stories like that too. Like the government sending troops in to quell quarrels that the miners are trying to unionize or whatever. I don't know that I couldn't rhyme the stories off to you, but yeah, it's crazy ones like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Glace Bay was a crazy place.
There's also a lot of, shipwreck and treasure history here on this side. It's crazy.
Gooseberry Cove.
And then out in the, by Lewisburg, I'm trying to remember the name of the island that's out there. There's a book, it's called Treasure Hunters by this guy from around here, Robert McKinnon, I think is his name.
Okay.
I think called Treasure. Anyway, I have it at the house, and he was a guy that back in the 70s, 80s, I believe he was off Dingwall Beach, the treasure that was there, down near, Skattery Island.
Oh yeah,
and like some crazy gold, like the original pieces that came over from the British and French ships that crashed out there, like finding like buckets and buckets of gold coins and stuff.
That's insane.
And then like also Parks coming in and swooping and taking them all away from them, and like with having claim to them, and then never seeing pieces of it ever again. I'd emailed him about chatting with him to do a podcast, and
that would be really cool.
He wasn't interested. So
no. there's a crazy one is. You know who Captain Kidd is?
No.
Captain Kidd.
The pirate.
Yeah, the pirate. He's like the most famous pirate.
Okay.
So like Oak Island's gold is supposed to be like Captain Kidd's gold.
Gotcha.
Right? And they've found Captain Kidd's gold all through New England and stuff like that. They found like stashes and stuff. And so so the mouth of Myra Gut, there's an S. And that's since we've been known, that's been known as, since we've been grown up, it's been known as Pirate's Cove, but it's actually called the Pirate Shipyard. And have you ever seen the movie, The Princess Bride?
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I haven't, but this story is ringing a bell now that you,
yeah.
Go on, yeah.
So Gold Kick Breton did a piece on this. And so Bartholomew Roberts, Dread Pirate Roberts, was the pirate that ran the pirate shipyard. And so they would seize Navy vessels. And they were so feared that when they flew their flag, the Navy would just abandon the vessel. And then they would take these Navy vessels up the mouth of the Myra and around the first S, and you couldn't see the tops of the mast from out at sea. And so there's this rock that I had, that Moose Bait did a piece on it, and there's a scattered few other photos of it on the internet, but there's no real information on where it's at. And it says Captain Kidd died without 1709 died without mercy, and a carving of a coffin on it, like the classic coffin shape. And so I really wanted to go to this place. I'm like, where is this ode to Captain Kidd at? And I didn't get directions to it. I didn't get a pin to it, but it did manage to track down something of a riddle, which was 14 miles upriver from the pirate shipyard lies an ode to Captain Kidd, approaching from the south northward of across the brook on Dale's Hill. And so, like, I'm like, what is this? So it took quite a while to figure out where it was, what the location of it was. I'm not going to tell anybody where it's at, but that's the riddle, and you can find it with that information. And so then we found the section of woods, and we gridded it off, and we searched in the woods, and we found this thing. And the cool story of it, I think, is that what then I found out is that area was their camp. And Captain Kidd had been arrested in, like, India and sent back to, I don't know, England or France or somewhere, and hanged. And, you know, these pirates are like, looked up to him. And they've got this news one day at their camp, and they're pillaging and whatever they do, whatever pirates do in their free time. And somebody decided to sit there and carve that into a rock. And that rock still stands today.
How crazy.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not like forever ago. You think you hear these stories and you think it's forever ago.
Yeah. It's like 200 years ago.
Yeah. And we're sitting in this house. We just bought this place last year. And I mean, I figured we were going to get into it, so it's a good segue. Uh-huh. This place was built in 1786. So that's 230 odd years ago, I think.
Yep.
And as far as we know, I think there was, what we were told was there was a Masonic lodge meeting here. I think it was one of the first Masonic lodge meetings to happen in Cape Breton was in this house.
Here we go.
But they keep really good records. And for years it was thought that this house was built in the 1800s sometime. And then there were documents found that showed that there was a Masonic lodge meeting in this house in 1786. And I believe that's how they dated this house back to then.
Wow.
So, yeah, so you think about history and you think that it happened eons and eons ago. And I'm not saying 230 years is like last week, but it's like the house is still standing. Like we're in a place where it's like living history. You know what I mean?
So there's a great story in that book I gave you today.
Old Sydney Town, by the way, which is an incredible book documenting these historic properties of the north end of Sydney.
Yeah.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome. There's a great story that there was an MLA elected. Jessam was his name. I wish I took the time to memorize the story. And I don't remember the date either. It was in the 1800s. But people were so stoked that this guy got elected that they went up to the army barracks up there and they hauled a cannon down the road to the bottom of Amelia Street, and they started packing it with charges and firing it off into the harbor. And I can only imagine all drinking too, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And taking very little care, the cannon misfired and harpooned somebody with a ramrod. Jesus. And that's like across the street from here.
I can see where that happened.
Wow.
But yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what do we, it's about that time, isn't it?
Oh. What do we got next? We got rapid fire, 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 fire.
I don't know which one I'm pressing. Nope, wrong one.
Rapid fire. Hey,
try it again.
Fire, fire. Yeah, there we go. All right. So either or both of you can answer these questions.
Sure.
Biggest inspiration?
Kyle.
Oh.
How am I not going to say you after that one?
My parents, actually. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. No offense.
How am I not going to say my parents after that?
Biggest inspiration, Kyle?
Depends on the day. There's so many people that inspire me all the time, so it changes day by day.
Spit one out.
You.
He's turning red over here.
When are you guys the most productive?
In the morning? Mm. At night.
She was pointing to herself for the morning.
Oh, yes, I'm in the morning.
At night. I was going to say late October through December.
Yeah. That works too. Who's your favorite local artist? Can be any kind of artist. And you can name more than one if you want.
So many. There's so many. Like, even in the building we work at, I mean, we work in Eldwick. This is not going to be rapid at all.
I'm just going to
basically list the artists that work at Eldwick, but like, and they're friends of ours, like Meredith McDonald. She does collage work.
Yep.
It's incredible. Allison Uma, you see her work all over the place these days. It's mm-hmm. insane. Wynn does great work.
Amavico Emma Flynn. Does beautiful embroidery, mm-hmm. local embroidery. She's from the Bay.
Yeah.
I'm obsessed with embroidery right now. I can't do it, but watching other people do it is so therapeutic.
Yeah. And tons of other leather workers too. I get so stoked on seeing other cool leather work happen. So
yep.
There's lots of good stuff out west. Lots of good stuff out east too.
I feel like you're talking faster.
This is rapid fire. This is, I'm trying to be rapid. Old Birch Workshop is fantastic too. Yeah.
Fee's just verbosely talking quickly. Saying more words just faster.
Is that not what rapid
fire? Okay, that's okay. Who makes the best pizza on Cape Breton Island?
Sonny's Pizza, R.I.P.
I think I've only had Napoli and Kenny's. Actually, what's that? Caledonia?
Caledonia pizza?
We stopped, okay, the amazing Caledonia pizza of the Bay, and it was cold. The one time I got it, I was so disappointed.
All right, so I just want to stop so here. Kyle and I from the same hometown. J&T's Pizza.
Oh, it's so good.
J&T's makes the best piece of pie you ever had.
And where was this at?
It's in Glace Bay. It's number, in Sterling.
The Sterling, yeah.
Yeah, you know how it's. You know they're a good pizza? It's because they're OG. You go in there, they only take cash.
Yeah.
No debit.
Yeah.
They don't even take. You come in there with debit, get out of here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Only cash. Yeah.
But I also too, like, these are some pretty legacy pizza brands when we get into pizza in Glace Bay. Like, it's the old Sonny's, Scotty's, all those ones. But Shane O'Hanley and the crew at A Better Bite Cafe are making incredible pizza. And I think that pizza goes under the radar, and it shouldn't. So I want to put Shane O'Hanley's pizza on blast right now. That pizza is good.
Shane makes a good pie.
Yeah.
There was like a scallop.
Shane makes a really good gourmet pie.
Yeah.
What we're talking about is like commercial, like,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
$3.50 slice.
Yeah. Yeah. $5 with a pop.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Gotta love those. I love those.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although you're not paying an arm and a leg for Shane's either. So it's worth, if you're looking for a really good piece of pizza, go get one from A Better Bite Cafe at Eldwick Arts Center.
I agree.
Yeah.
Cake or cupcakes?
Cupcake.
Gotta get that cake.
All right. Marry, fuck, kill. We know what this is?
Yes, we know what this is.
Belts, handbags, wallets.
Okay, belts can go kill. Kill belts.
Kill belts? Kyle, who are you killing?
Wait, what was it? Belts,
handbags,
wallets. Killing belts too. I love it. Like, it's great. Like it's just, they're a bit of a pain in the ass to make. So if I got to kill one, I'm killing belts.
Who you marry? Who you marrying?
Wallets.
Wallets. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, for sure.
And who you fucking?
Handbags are fun to like play around with. You know what I mean? Like, there's you can make so many different styles. You can put pockets in all different kinds of places. So I absolutely handbags.
Winter or summer?
Winter.
Oh, interesting. That's two for two there.
Right?
Bryson was winter too.
This might change if you ask me again in a few years, but...
Ask me in the end of February. I'm saying summer. I like the start of winter. I like all of summer.
Favorite home-cooked meal? We had to, you guys cooked us some bologna and beans today, which was really nice.
My mom makes really good sweet and sour chicken from scratch.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
She does. That is really good. Mm-hmm. We went out to Glen Morrison last week to get that wood, and grandma put on beans and bologna and potatoes.
Nice.
And it was incredible. So I got to go with that one. Yeah.
That's where you got the inspiration for today.
100%. I was craving it since I had it last week. I was like, I'm making it again for the boys.
So full disclosure, we ate that before this podcast was recorded.
Yeah.
Full bellies. Only full bellies for this podcast.
Yeah.
What is that? Is that it?
That's it.
That's
all I got.
Oh man, that was rapid. That's the most rapid fire we had yet, I think.
I think so.
Yeah. There's a couple of them that went off the rails. So...
Canary reeled me. I was heading off the rails there. Canary reeled me in. Hey,
get back in here, Fee. Get back in.
It was mostly because of me. So, yeah. And I cut that out. So, but anyways, yeah, we're here. Okay, cool. Well, I mean, thanks for sitting down with us. That was, that's pretty much sums this podcast up.
So where can people find you guys?
You can find us online at www.feesoriginalgoods.ca.
That's P-H.
P-H-E-E-S, originalgoods.ca. You can find us at the same name on Instagram and Facebook, or in real life at Eldweg Arts Center at 170 George Street in the north end of Sydney.
4L on the elevator.
Room 402 to be more specific than that.
Cool. You can find us. I'm Jonathan Canary. We're on at Sounds of Fire on Instagram. And you can find Lee at Live Life Intense.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's pretty much it. We're going to hit the road. And it is much worse out right
now. So, it's been coming down.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for sitting down with us, folks.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in.
Catch you on the flip side.
Really appreciate it.
See ya.
Bye.
Well, that's it, folks. Hope you guys enjoyed that podcast with Robin and Kyle from Fee's Original Goods. I personally own a bunch of their stuff, and it holds up very, very well. So if you're looking for any leather goods, belts, bags, that sort of stuff, head to feesoriginalgoods.com, I believe, or .ca. I can't remember. It'll be in the show notes here. Or follow them on Instagram at Fee's Original Goods. I also want to mention again that we have a preseason sale on our glamping and accommodation packages on our website, livelifeintense.com. You can save 10% off your entire booking when you book before the end of March of this year for the coming summer. That's 2022. So if you want to save a couple bucks, head to livelifeintense.com, book in your glamping and tour, whatever that may be. Also, this weekend, we are heading to Halifax to do a couple interviews and record a couple podcasts. And one that I'm super excited about is with Benoit Lalonde, who wrote the Waterfalls of Nova Scotia handbook and recently released the Waterfalls of Cape Breton book, which is a documentation of all kinds of waterfalls that he's found around Cape Breton that may or may not be listed online. But anyways, that's going to be fun. We're going to chit chat and maybe we'll be able to pull some secret falls out of them. That he doesn't have in the book, maybe. Anyways, follow us at Live Life Intense on all the platforms, share this podcast, and put a rating on there if you can. It really helps out with populating feeds. Until next time, peace.